Interactive TV, Jack, the wave of the future. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast, where we're all about cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. My name is Zach Brooks, and I'm joined by...
Brendan Fitzpatrick.
And last week, we discussed Always Be My Maybe, the romantic comedy on Netflix. And this week, due to a connection that this movie was mentioned in Always Be My Maybe, and directly ties to it, we will be discussing Speed, the Keanu Reeves action movie from 1994.
Way to go, Zach.
I might have had to flip over and check what that year was. And then at the end of the podcast, we will decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent in from the listeners and ones that we brought as your hosts. We will be spoiling Speed, what there is to spoil. I feel like everything, all the plot points of Speed probably already out there. I don't know what we could actually spoil, but...
I guess there's a couple things. I think even if you had never seen this movie before, you know what the premise of Speed is. Like, you've seen the memes or you've seen the gifs. So you know enough about, like... You've seen it parodied in enough other things that you know what this movie is.
Yeah. But if you are worried about Speed spoilers, you can jump ahead to the latter discussion for next week. We'll put that timestamp in the podcast description. Or you can pause this podcast, go watch Speed. It is streaming on, I think, what, Brendan, IMDb TV is how you watched it last
week? Yeah, so I watched it on, well, I loaded it up on my Amazon app through Roku, and then Amazon decided, hey, you should watch this on IMDb TV for free instead of paying us. And so it just automatically loaded it through IMDb TV, which does have commercials, but I didn't actually mind it.
Yeah. Did the commercials cut anything out? Did you
notice
anything cut out? So they just take breaks?
They just take breaks every, like, 25 minutes or so. So there were four or five commercial breaks, and it wasn't too bad. It was, like, 90 seconds each, which gave me time to, like, run to the bathroom or grab a snack or, you know, grab a glass of water or whatever. And it really took me back to watching movies on TNT, TBS, those basic cable channels when I was a kid in the mid-90s, when these action movies like Speed, like Die Hard, would be on TV in the middle of the afternoon on a Sunday, and you would just sit there because there wasn't anything else better on and just watch it and have to put up with the commercials.
But unlike those showings, they didn't have they wouldn't replace the vulgarity in this movie.
Correct. Yeah, there were no words bleeped or dubbed over. You hear all the bad words, and then you I don't know what you would cut out of this movie to save vulgarity. Maybe
there is a line where Jack says "fuck me." Like, probably my favorite line in the movie is when Jack says "fuck me," and Alan Ruck's character goes, "Yeah, he said, oh darn."
Like, yeah, I
laughed
that.
So hard at that. That was great.
It's very good. We'll talk about Alan Ruck. Alan Ruck is very good in this movie and his limited amount of screen time.
I think you can go stream it on there. And if you don't mind the commercials, I think for some movies, the commercials would really screw up the tension. This one does build a lot of suspense, but I feel like this isn't good. You're not taking anything away from the experience by watching it with commercials, or you could drop down the $3 or $4 to rent it or get it from your local library as well, which I thought about doing, but they only had this on DVD and I'm a snob. And I was like, I'm not getting a DVD. I got to get it on Blu-ray. So I watched it. I just paid to rent it instead. So
instead of, you know, you could have had another version of the 90s experience of watching this movie if you had just gone regular DVD.
Or VHS. Yeah, I don't think my library has VHS, but that's, I did. So I was surprised because I do have a handful of DVDs and they're from, you know, when I was mostly in college. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised I don't own Speed on DVD. I own a ton of other movies. I own a ton of action movies, you know, all the X-Men movies, things like that. But I would have thought I owned Speed, and I looked, and I don't have it. But I'm pretty sure that we had it on VHS, because my brother and I watched this movie a ton growing up.
So, yeah. And you probably didn't see this in the theaters. You were probably way too young to have seen this in the theaters.
So what I do remember about this movie is that when it came out, so I was 9 years old when this came out, because it came out in 94. And we had a neighbor across the street, because my brother and I both wanted to see it, because, like, we watched Terminator 2 when we were little kids. I mean, we watched R-rated movies. It wasn't my mom didn't really care. But we had a neighbor who told my mom, your kids cannot watch Speed. It is inappropriate for children. And so we weren't allowed to watch it until probably like 96, 97, I would think, for a couple of years.
The thing is, I'm not sure what's so really inappropriate about it. I mean, maybe the fact that Dennis Hopper is watching a non-Michigan college football game on his TVs.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that as well. No, I think the only part I do remember her talking about, like, there's a scary opening scene with an elevator, which I will say that is pretty terrifying. Yeah. I mean, there's violence in it. There's a little bit of swearing. True.
Yeah.
But I don't think this movie is not any more inappropriate for kids than Terminator 2 that we watched. My brother watched Friday growing up. I mean, that's
right. I mean, it's basically Die Hard on a bus.
Yes, this is definitely Die Hard on a bus. Yeah, the few things that my mom said, you are not allowed to watch that. Speed and Melrose Place. Those were the two things that my mom decided to be a Puritan about.
Man, no sexy thrillers for Zach.
Anyways, so we'll talk about Speed. I mean, I don't know. Should we just get into it? Do you want to do what's the best that you watched this week real quick? What was the
I'd be happy to. So the best thing that I watched this week is actually an Oscar-winning film that a lot of people say didn't deserve to win the Oscar of the year and won it. I'm talking about the 2010 film The King's Speech, starring Colin Firth and Jeffrey Rush. This follows the saga of the soon-to-be King
George
VI of England, who has a debilitating stutter or stammer, as he calls it, and he meets with a great doctor played by Jeffrey Rush, who has all these experimental ways that he's going to get Colin Firth's George to overcome his stammer. I really, really enjoyed this movie, like, more than I thought it would be. I thought it was going to be really boring, to be honest. And I wasn't really bored. It was a good sit back, hang out with these crazy people and learn about a more modern English royalty that I didn't know very much about. You know, I'm familiar with the modern era of, you know, that's going on in this season of The Crown with Charles and Diana and all that stuff. I'm familiar with that era, and I'm familiar with some of the older eras, like the 17 and 1800s, but I didn't know anything about George VI or his philanderous brother, who was originally king, but only for a little under a year before he had to abdicate for daring to fall in love and propose to a woman who had previously been divorced. Had no idea about any of that, but that was wild.
Did this inspire you to go watch The Crown now that you've watched the movie?
No, not really, but it did inspire me to keep going with British dramas in my ladder as much as I can and sort of fill out the gaps in my history of British royalty through movies rather than TV shows. I just don't want to get into The Crown. It's too much. It's too long. It's too.
I've heard people love it. I watched a little bit of it. I couldn't get super into it.
It's a lot. I mean, maybe that's like a down the line thing. I could get into The Crown, but it's, you know, and I've heard great things about it. Like, I don't want to bash on people who love The Crown. Like, teach their own. I think
that's nice of you.
You know, but I don't know that at this point that it's for me. I've got so much other stuff that I want to watch above The Crown, but I did really enjoy The King's Speech. But I understand the controversy of it winning Best Picture at the 2010 Oscars, because it definitely should not have.
I saw The King's Speech, and was it at the 2011 Oscars? Because didn't the movie come out in 2010?
It would have been the 2011 Oscars.
Yeah, because I remember I saw it right after I moved to DC with some people I worked with, and I liked it a lot. I thought it was, you know, pretty well-made movie, and I was surprised that it gets so much backlash. I mean, it is kind of like your standard Oscar Beatty movie, but sometimes like standard Oscar Beatty movies are good. I thought The Artist, I enjoyed The Artist when I saw it as well.
Yeah, or it actually reminded me a lot of The Favorite, which came out a couple years later and also revolves around British royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really fantastic.
Yeah. You
know, we love our historic Britain dramas at the Oscars. So
that's true. So, I also think that's a good movie. I would recommend people see it.
Yeah.
So. It's not going to be something, you know, totally unique and different, but it's a heartwarming film.
Yeah. What about you? What did you watch?
So I did not actually watch that many movies. I actually only watched one movie this week. So I guess by default, that is my, my movie of the week to talk about. As I told you before we started podcasting, that I'm trying to read and walk more. And between that and some of the sports that were on, and I was at my mom's house for a little bit, so I just like didn't get around to any movies. I didn't even watch a movie for my Criterion Challenge this week. But I did watch, for my personal ladder, I watched Tombstone, which I know is one you'd been wanting me to watch, from right around the same time as Speed, 1 year before Speed. So went to the 90s a lot this week. And I thought it was a pretty fun movie. It's a little bit long. It was over 2 hours. I don't know if it needed to be that long. But it was fun to watch in context for all the other Westerns I've been watching, to watch something a little bit, you know, more, I say more modern, but it's 20 years old now, 30 years old now. But it's fun. I don't really know much about Wyatt Earp. It's, you know, it captures that that Western feel that I've been getting from all of these classic movies. But you get something with some more actors that I grew up with Val Kilmer and Kurt Russell. And I like seeing Sam Elliott. And it just, I mean, an all-star cast, really.
Yeah.
I mean, top to bottom. Even some of the cameos that are in this, like Charlton Heston was in it. And also, I didn't even realize this until I looked at the IMDb, but Harry Carey Jr., who was in a lot of the classic Westerns that I've been watching, was in this as well. And apparently Billy Bob Thornton, but I did not actually recognize Billy Bob Thornton in this movie.
Yeah, he was Johnny Tyler, who gets kicked out of the bar via shotgun when Wyatt first gets to town. And he Wyatt like slaps him across the face and kicks him out of the bar. Yeah, it's a really, like, a lot of who's who that guys who became famous shortly after or were famous before. I mean, Michael Rooker is in there, if you're looking for
another
him.
One. I don't think I ever, I know what Michael Rooker looks like. I don't think I ever actually recognize, I mean, again, like, I could just watch this movie again just to do, like, the, I've been talking about it a lot, but, like, the pointing Leo gif of, like, oh, that's that guy, that's that
exactly.
guy.
Exactly, like, yeah, you should look at the IMDb and watch it again, like, as you're looking at the, oh, that's that guy, that guy, that guy. Yeah, it's,
I did laugh when, you know, we brought up Melrose Place earlier, but Jason Priestley showing up in this movie. I was like, oh, 90210. This is right around the time of 90210. And Brandon Walsh is apparently a cowboy.
Apparently so.
Glasses.
Yeah, I am 100% in love with Tombstone. It's a movie I grew up with. You know, it was one that we had on both VHS and DVD. My sister and I still quote the movie back and forth to each other. The Val Kilmer performance is just outstanding.
That was what really stood out to me was Val Kilmer's performance, for sure.
Yeah, well, the fun fact about that movie is the guy that directed it really didn't direct it at all. He was a brand new director who had never done anything before, and the rumor goes that basically Kurt Russell took over the script from him and said, don't worry, I'm going to direct this, but you get to keep your name on it. And basically, Kurt Russell just did it all himself. That's the rumor about Tombstone, is that it's basically Kurt Russell made this movie.
I don't know what Kurt Russell's directing style is like. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Kurt Russell is definitely the centerpiece in this. But yeah, we do get, you know, that Val Kilmer performance where he's really swinging for the fences. And then a lot of other just kind of solid performances.
Yeah, I mean, you get Bill Paxton in there as Morgan. He's fantastic. You get what's this freaking name from Deadwood? Bill.
It was weird to see Powers Booth. This is only 7 years before Frailty, which is where that's where I actually know Powers Booth the best from. I know he's been in other stuff, but I've seen Frailty a million times. Speaking of a movie with Bill Paxton and Powers Booth, and this is only 7 years before Frailty came out, but Powers Booth looks about 20 years younger in this movie than he does in Frailty.
Yeah, for sure.
So
he looks great. I mean, he's fantastic performance from him.
Yeah, so I definitely would go back and rewatch Tombstone. I think it's a fun movie. If it was on, I mean, there's not really, you know, you don't really watch movies on TNT anymore, but if it was on TNT, you know, I don't think I'd turn it off. It definitely goes off the rails in the second half of this movie.
It does.
But not in a bad way. Just I wasn't expecting how wild it was going to get.
It's certainly more digestible than the 4.5-5 hour Wyatt Earp biopic that Kevin Costner made that came out the same year. That's just called Wyatt Earp, and it's
I didn't realize that Kevin Costner made a Wyatt Earp.
He did, yeah.
So it's like, that's like a, another, it's like the twin movie theory. It's like,
it is a twin movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Huh. This is when people don't talk about the Tombstone Wyatt Earp twin movie theory.
It is a twin movie. You could ladder to it if you wanted to. It's a long watch.
I'm good.
You know, the cast is good, but it's not nearly as good as Tombstone.
Yeah. No, I have a couple more Westerns, and then I think I will move on to something different.
Mosey on down the trail.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Ride off at the sunset.
Well, speaking of riding off into things, should we hop on the bus? Start talking about
Let's
speed.
Get on the bus.
Yeah. All right. So Speed, this is a rewatch for both of us. It was my suggestion from last week. You know, obviously there is a particular reason why we would talk about this in Always Be My Maybe, and that is that, spoilers for Always Be My Maybe, that Keanu Reeves has that cameo in Always Be My Maybe. So obviously Keanu Reeves in both of these movies.
Yep.
But he also directly references Speed. He says that the dinner that they had, he makes, you know, residuals from one shilling of Speed enough to pay for their $6,000 dinner if they haven't always been, maybe. So, and the very fun connection to last year was that actually almost exactly 1 year ago, we did Hot Fuzz. And in Hot Fuzz, they're watching TV and they're watching Point Break.
Yep.
And so it was very similar. It was like, oh, a Keanu Reeves action movie that is directly referenced in the movie. We missed that lining up by 1 week. So this is
close enough for government work.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what, episode 7 of Movie Ladder season 2?
Yeah.
And last year, Hot Fuzz was episode 7. So the Keanu movie was episode 8. So we barely missed it. But
Close enough.
Yeah. Close enough. I thought that it was such a fun connection. I really had to go to bat for this one.
Actually, technically, this is week 8. Technically,
yeah, this is
week 1 because Young Frankenstein was week 0 because it was a reset.
Right. So. But Hot Fuzz was week 8 last year, so we're still. I was just had my numbers off. So, week 8 last year we did Hot Fuzz. Week 8 this year we're doing Speed. We'll see how we progress. We did a bunch of LA crime movies in a row after Point Break last year. This is an LA crime movie. So
Right.
The plot of this is probably the most high concept movie that we've talked about where described in an elevator pitch.
It starts with an elevator pitch.
A terrorist has put a bomb on a bus, and once the bus crosses 50 miles an hour, it cannot drop below 50 or the bus will explode. And Keanu Reeves, Officer Jack Traven, has to save everybody on the bus.
Yep.
That is the plot. Mea culpa from both of us. We kept saying 55 miles an hour. I think that's a Mandela effect. Where we thought it was 55. I think because there's the song, I Can't Drive 55.
I think it's also the like you want a number to match because it's like 88 miles per hour, right?
True. Yeah.
In Back to the Future, right? So your Mandela effect is the number matching. So it's like 55. So
is that a palindrome number? Would that be considered a palindrome?
Yeah, I guess.
I think so. So yeah. Would this movie be better if it was 55 instead of 50?
I don't think it makes a difference. No. 50. I think because the Mandela effect is 55. Yes, because it would make us correct when we said 55.
Well,
so yes, that makes it better.
Well, and there's the song, which is what I used for the outro last week, which is "I Can't Drive 55," which I think is one of the early connections I had for this movie before I even watched it was, oh, this is another movie possibly inspired by a song. Last week was right. "Always Be My Maybe," inspired by "Always Be My Baby." Right. This one is I Can't Drive 50, inspired by I Can't Drive 55. So a little bit of a tangent.
It's close. Yeah. Fair enough.
So, there's also there's a prologue in this movie and an epilogue, basically, where the prologue is Jack and Harry are saving a bunch of people who are in an elevator that's been blown up and is going to drop. And then the epilogue to this movie is Jack chasing Dennis Hopper's character through the subway tunnels because he's got the money, and then he's saving Annie, played by Sandra Bullock. Right. Both kind of feel a little tacked on. Because,
I agree. Yeah.
I don't mind the ending, but it's weird.
The ending more than the beginning, for sure. Like, they needed a way to make there not be just one giant, crazy, out of control vehicle, but two in this movie. So they were like, "How? What's bigger than a bus crashing and blowing up an airport? Why don't we have a subway explode out of the subway tunnel onto the streets of Hollywood right in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Yeah. It's like one of those I always forget, because I see this with a bunch of times. I always forget that there is that ending tacked on.
Right.
It's similar to the end of Die Hard with a Vengeance,
yeah,
where I always forget after John McClane gets the phone call at the end of Die Hard with a Vengeance that there's like a whole nother segment.
Go on the boat and they're like, come on.
Yeah. And we said that this movie is Die Hard in a bus. And I do feel like the really closest connection to this movie of this time frame is Die Hard with a Vengeance. Because
I have that as my number one connection for connections to spoil connections later. But now maybe I won't use it if we want to talk about it. But this movie is a lot like Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, which came out, I think, also in 94, maybe in 95.
I think it was a year later.
Yeah.
But
even in the way that it's structured, it's structured in the beginning of Die Hard with a Vengeance is John McClane going out on like one mission because of the terrorist. Yeah. And then there is the main terrorist plot for about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. And then this epilogue tacked on to the end where John is chasing that terrorist and where Jack is chasing that terrorist. So they are very similar. You just sub in Samuel L. Jackson for Sandra Bullock, really.
Right. Basically. Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. And it reminded me a lot, especially because it's all driven by phone calls and taunting by the other person on the phone. Mm-hmm. It's a specific vendetta against that person that the bad guy has. The bad guy is out to get Jack and only wants Jack to deal with this. And in Die Hard with a Vengeance, it's, John Malkovich or Jeremy Irons only wants John McClane.
Which that one makes more sense why it's personal. I don't want to spoil. I don't know if anybody would be worried about being spoiled on Die Hard with a Vengeance, but there is a personal reason. This though, was there a personal reason why Howard Payne was going after Jack? I mean, wasn't it just he's mad at the police force in general for the way they treated him?
But I mean, in general, but Jack also got the credit for saving all the people on the bus or on the elevator and got this medal and he got all this credit and praise that Dennis Hopper's character never got as a police officer. So it's like petty jealousy.
But he should be mad if people didn't give him praise. That's not Jack's fault. What's Jack supposed to do? Like,
but he also accepted the medal. His grand plan, I mean, he did, he didn't let the people in the elevator die. He got the bomb off the elevator. I mean, he basically foiled the entire plan and made sure that Dennis Hopper didn't get his money at the beginning. So, I mean,
What is Dennis Hopper's grand plan in this? I think that's the thing that really sticks out to me when I was watching
this. Yeah, so he's doing all this
just for like $50,000?
$3 million.
Or three, whatever, fine. $3
million. $3.2 million. And
he picked a loss.
It's a very specific amount of money, especially for 1994. And it doesn't, his plan still doesn't make any sense because, how was he going to make sure that he got the money before the bus even ran out of gas? Like, that's something they never even talk about until the fuel line gets cut. Like, this bus should have run out of gas before it even got to the airport.
Nope, it shouldn't have. Because at the beginning of the movie,
I have that as a big question.
And I do just want to apologize. I said 32 was a lost number. I did not mean that. Sorry.
Good try.
Yeah, my bad. It's a reverse of a lost number. But
that's why I ignored it.
Yeah. At the beginning of the movie, when Howard's on the phone with Jack, he says he wants his money by 11 a.m. And it's 8:30 in the morning. So it's only 3 hours. And Howard has probably done his research enough to know how long these bus schedules go before they have to stop and get gas. So he probably knew that the bus starts at 8 a.m. and it goes till, noon or something. So 11 a.m. gives him enough time for the bus not to run out of gas.
But that definitely wasn't the start of that bus's route because there are so many people on the bus already.
Yeah, it's 8:30. So he probably picked up some. I mean, it's not that far into the bus's route. I would imagine they don't tell you that, but it does seem like Howard has done he planned this. He put the bomb on the bus. He's got so many plans in place. He knows when those buses refuel, and those buses don't just refuel when they notice their gas getting low. They refuel at particular points in the day. The only reason why the bus starts running out of gas is because Jack punctures the gas tank.
Right. So I guess that's something I need clarification on is how much gas does a bus hold as that goes through downtown LA.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
How long does a bus full of gas last?
I think without being
punctured.
I think it's got a huge gas tank. And so I would imagine, and also they do say when you drive at 50 miles an hour, that's actually the most fuel efficient time. That's why your highway miles are higher than your city miles for a car. You don't have a car, so you don't know this, but you get better fuel mileage on the highway because you're not stopping and starting. You're staying in a high gear and you're just driving at a particular speed. So it actually is being more economical with the fuel, if you want to think about it like that, by telling the bus to stay above 50. So, it's all part of the plan here.
Well, yeah. So other than the plan, do we have any other criticism of Dennis Hopper's character and his characterization here? I mean, I think he's one of the quintessential 90s action bad guys. If you had to like list them off, I think he's iconic. He has a lot of really great lines, even if they don't always make a ton of sense. Yeah. They're sort of like, he's very like, I'm saying this and having this reaction because it's in the script sometimes.
I feel like that is a criticism of the whole movie, is so much is said because it's in the script or so much is done. And it doesn't really, when you're taking notes on the movie, it doesn't quite make sense.
Right. Like the whole Arizona Wildcat thing, like I get that it's on the sweater, but him calling her Wildcat before that, like, just doesn't make any.
I actually really like that because that reveal I think is fun. I wish I would have, when I watched this movie, would have paid attention to, can you see the Wildcat sweater at all before Jack points it out?
No, I don't think you can.
Like, are there just like shots of her where the Arizona logo is in the background? What I don't understand is how he can see it, because the angle that he has is like way up high.
Yeah, TV. There's no way he would be able to see that.
No, it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I think it would have made more sense if she, maybe this would have been too obvious, but if she's wearing like an Arizona t-shirt and it's got a big University of Arizona logo on it.
I guess if he was looking at the screen when she first took over the bus before she took the sweater off. Because she took the sweater off as she was driving.
True. So
I don't think
it was a big logo, was it?
Yeah.
I think it was just like a small, like.
Yeah, it was like a little emblem, yeah.
Right. So I feel like you can't, I mean, I don't know. It's funny that he calls her Wildcat. It's like, it works, but it also, when you think about it, it doesn't really make any sense at all.
It's too bad there's not a Thundercats movie. We could...
Oh yeah, that's true.
We can ladder to the Thundercats next.
My question, and you brought this up earlier, is like, why is Howard watching football? He's got all these TVs with his plan, and then he's got two TVs on football games.
Is it a Saturday? It must be a Saturday.
That's what I was thinking. It must be a Saturday.
It must be a college football Saturday.
It looks like college. I was thinking maybe it could have been pro and it's a Sunday, but it seemed like all these people are going to work.
I guess I know a lot of people in this – in America work on Saturdays. I don't want to say people don't, but come on.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I guess you have Alan Ruck's character who's a tourist. So it would make sense if he's vacationing. It's a weekend. And, you have Ortiz who, seems like he's like a repairman of some sort.
Yeah. He's a day laborer of some sort.
So I guess, you know, it would make sense that he would be working on a Saturday. Do we know where Annie was going? Was she going to work as well?
We don't know. Yeah.
We don't really know much about her in this movie, but what we do know about her is that she got her license revoked for speeding. Did you have a favorite person on the bus?
A favorite person on the bus who wasn't Annie or Jack?
Yeah.
On this watch, I would say it was probably Alan Ruck's character. Yeah. And I think a lot of that is from his awkward back and forth with Sandra Bullock when he first gets on the bus and he's talking about like, I'm only in town for a couple of days, some vacation, and then I want to see this and this. And she's just like, all right, weirdo, I'm moving to this other seat.
Yeah, I have gum
on my seat. That was hilarious. And then all of the stuff with the phone call, as we were talking about a little bit ago, is hilarious when Jack is looking under the bus and trying to describe the mom, and he's just like, doesn't really know what he's saying. He's saying it. And then it's like, he says, oh, fuck. And he goes, oh, darn.
Yeah,
it's really, really funny.
No, I like this character. I also really liked Ortiz on this.
The other part with Ruck is when he says, "Big wad." He says it's a big wad. Yeah. It's like, oh my god.
Right. He doesn't do a ton in this movie besides like be awkward.
Yeah.
Translate the phone call, and then he's the last one to cross from the main bus to the rescue bus, and he almost falls and dies.
Well, he also has that really great line when they first get to the airport, when he's like, "Oh, we're at the airport," and Ortiz is like, "Yeah, so," and he's like, "I've already seen the airport."
I thought that was a better Ortiz moment, because Ortiz like looks at the camera like Jim from The Office. It is just like, can you get a load of this guy? Like we're about to die, and he's like he's complaining about that he already saw the airport.
Tell me why you glommed onto Ortiz this much.
I just think like Ortiz was like a really comforting character. I like that he's always there to help out. He's got he's got the bag of tools, so he gets the bottom panel open. And then I really love when Alan Ruck, once Alan Ruck gets across, then they give each other
a giant bear hug. Yeah, I love that too.
Yeah. It's just like, that's like, you can feel like, oh, these are the characters. Like, this is why Jack saved them. It's not just random people, but it's people who were saved. So, I really liked that character. How about a least favorite character on the bus?
I mean, I hate to say it because she died, but...
Nope, you're right, though, but you are correct.
Well, the lady that... Actually, you know what? No, I don't blame the lady for that moment. I blame the stupid cop who told her to jump, who, like, reached out his arms for her and was like, "Come on, I'll get you." After Jack said, "Nobody else can get off the bus." Like, is that Mac's fault for not relaying that to the morons next to him? Or is it the moron's fault for trying to get the lady off the bus? I'm not sure, but there was a full breakdown in communication there.
Yeah, that cop thought he was so smart. He's like, "Oh, I got it. Just jump off the bus and we'll save you." No.
I got you. He's like, "Nope." I'm sorry, again.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say, going back, how could Howard see that she jumped off the bus? Because that camera that he has is...
No, because he can see that there's somebody on the ledge because he's watching the news footage.
Mm-hmm.
He's watching the news footage from the helicopter and sees that there's somebody in the doorway of the bus who isn't the driver and isn't Jack.
It's a good thing he didn't decide to get a beer or go to the bathroom at that moment.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Everything is very conveniently timed with the screens in this movie, especially when they do the tape delay.
Mm-hmm. And that's when he's in the bathroom, I think.
Yeah, and it takes him so long to figure out that the Asian American lady who's sitting behind Annie has moved her purse.
She drops her purse.
Well, but I think it's she sets it down. She has it in her lap and she sets it down.
Yeah. That almost makes her my least favorite person on the bus because she almost screwed up the... Jack told them, said, like,
no big movements.
No big movements. And she's like, "Oh, but hang on, let me just move my purse to the other side." I think if you're by default taking the woman who got blown up off the side of the bus because you don't care about victims,
I'm gonna give half blame for that to the cop who tried to get her off, but yeah, it's her fault.
Half blame her. I don't know what this character's name is. He doesn't do anything, but if I described him as David Silver, would you know who I'm talking about?
You're talking about floppy haired guy.
Yeah,
the guy with the David Silver haircut and the sport coat who's just always sort of there in the background gawking at everything, but doesn't actually do anything.
Yeah, I don't like that guy's hair.
You get that's, one I don't good like him look at him. Hair. Is he the guy that tries to attack Miguel or what? I'm sorry, what was the guy's name at the beginning who has the gun?
I think it is Miguel, the guy who thought that Jack was on the bus.
Yeah, to get arrest him. Yeah, it shoots. Yeah.
And I actually really liked how they set that up because they can't tell what Jack is saying. And Jack is like, "All right, we have a situation here." And the guy immediately thinks that they're coming to arrest him.
That's 100% Jack's fault for like not making anything clear. But at the same time, he was trying to keep everyone calm.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what's he supposed to do? Get on there and be like, "All right, everybody, there's a bomb on the bus. Nobody freak out." It's like he's trying to set the situation. Like that guy with the gun needed to just chill for a second. But yeah, then the floppy haired dude just is kind of there.
David Silver. We'll call him David Silver.
Lots of 90210 and Melrose Place references in this podcast.
Maybe that's where we'll be going next.
Maybe, TV
ladder. So did you have a favorite stunt or practical effect? because that was something that I really picked up on this time, rewatching it. And, you know, as we've been watching some more older action movies and older, you know, pre-CGI movies the last year and a half or so, I really appreciated the practical effects of everything they did with the bus, mm-hmm. as far as, like, everything they had it crashing through. They didn't shy away from having the bus just ram the shit out of every car it ran alongside.
I really liked like the bus crashing into things. I liked that a lot on this watch, where I was just like it just felt like you could really feel that action, and it felt very like not visceral, but it just felt like all the action felt very grounded.
Yeah.
Where it would like, it would have to like go, you know, when it went past the car that was pulled over by the cop and it cut too close and took off the side of the car. And
yeah, exactly. It
felt like stuff where maybe because I haven't watched this movie in so long, like since I've been driving, I mean, I'm sure I've watched it since I've been driving, but I felt more that the driving of the bus, like having to drive a big bus, maybe like,
yeah,
it reminded me of like driving a U-Haul, I think.
For sure. Example. And like everything with like, like the one moment when she thinks she hit a baby and she actually like, first off, let's talk about who has a carriage full of cans.
That is called, the script needs her to think she kills a baby. So let's have a carriage full of cans.
It's insane. It's a total non sequitur to anything else in the movie. But I also still kind of like that moment, like, because I think Sandra Bullock is an amazing actress.
Yeah.
And she does an amazing job in this movie, and it's such a, like, great moment for her character where, like, she basically loses it and is like, I can't do this, I can't do this. Like,
yeah, no, I thought it's effective. I don't really know how they do it better without her actually hitting a baby.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But, yeah, a carriage full of cans. It's a funny scene, but...
It's never made any sense to me why it's a carriage full of cans, and
It's good where those things happen, like when the bus driver gets shot, when she thinks she hits the baby, where they lose their focus and their foot starts coming off the gas, and then they cut the speedometer. The speedometer is really slowly creeping back towards
50. And then when they hit the mid morning traffic in the middle of the interchange in the freeway, mm-hmm. where like they have to ride the curb to stay above 50, or else it's gonna be like disastrous, because they have like all these cars piled up. Because I thought they did a really good job playing with LA traffic. Like, I've never been to LA, but I have to imagine that this is what LA traffic is actually like on a Saturday.
It's as bad as advertised.
Yes, like that's what it really seems like. And so I really appreciate the movie for not shying away from that. Like,
yeah, well, and that's one of the things that works. And you know, this movie does do a good job of making you think that, I mean, you never really think the bus is going to blow up, because then it would just blow up and the movie would end and all of our main characters would be dead. But they do put you in situations where it's not just like we have to drive the bus, but we have these obstacles, like video game levels almost, where, you know, the driver is shot and his foot is coming off the gas, or Annie is upset about something, or Annie is distracted about something and her foot is coming off the gas, or there's physical, you know, the highway, the, you know, the main big stunt is that the highway is unfinished and they're going to jump the highway.
I love how mad Mac gets about the plans. He's like, all right, everybody's freaking fired.
Could they have airlifted the bus, like gotten some helicopters, airlifted the bus off of the ground and then had the wheels keep spinning?
No, because it still would have triggered the bomb. Like, he explained that it's in the same way, I believe. I don't know enough about how buses work, but I believe it would have been the same reason that Keanu said that they couldn't put it in neutral and just let it ride at 50.
Well, because when you're in neutral, the wheels aren't spinning is the difference.
Okay.
And actually, as we're talking about wheels spinning being a plot line, I'm curious, that might be a connection to a movie that is suggested. So, I think that they couldn't really do that, because I don't think it's physically possible to lift a bus, to airlift a bus. You would need like 10 helicopters to do that. But also, again, you know, Howard is watching everything. So he would just blow up the bus.
I thought the bus stunt really still holds up, and you can like see, even though you can see exactly when it switches to the stunt version of the bus going over. Like, the entire reason that they have to have everybody duck down is so that you won't wonder where all the passengers are in the long shot, you know?
Well, and they also wanted them in braced position. Like, they would, because they did that
on an airplane. Well. But yeah. But it's also, like, a practical reason, because...
Did you look up the Mythbusters for this? Because I know they did it on Mythbusters, but I don't...
I did not have time for it today. It was a crazy day at work, but I wanted to. But yeah, I imagine that... I think you probably could. I think it's possible.
Let's see. I'm just going to do a quick search and see if I can find Speed Mythbusters. Yeah,
I actually, more than the jump while you're looking that up, I was way more thrilled by the... trolley cart underneath the bus part of it, like, that was more terrifying to me than the bus jump.
Yeah,
like, having to go under a bus on a little trolley cart and try to, like, not get run over by the tires in the meantime.
They do really make it where you can see how close Jack comes to the tires running over him, and then when the tires actually run over the trolley cart and how it just gets totally crunched, and that could have been him had he not stabbed the gas tank and held himself up.
It also really grip. It also does a really great job showing how he barely fits under the bus, and that's a great, like, bit of foreshadowing to the end of the movie with the train and the light.
Oh,
because it shows, like, okay, he's short enough to get under this. He barely misses the light at the end, and then he can do the I'm taller bit to Dennis Hopper and shove his head up into the light to, you know, to kill him.
Okay, so we gotta talk about that. I'm taller. Yeah. That line makes that isn't clever. It's not clever. Set up at all in the movie. There is no, like, it would have made more sense if in the first scene when he meets Dennis Hopper, he's like, oh, wow, this guy's, you're pretty short for a terrorist or something, you know, like, had some reference to his height before the climactic moment of the movie when the villain is killed. The line he delivers is, but I'm taller. What does that even mean? But I'm taller. You're taller.
Because his arms are longer to hold him in place for his head to get cut off? I don't know.
Your arm, like, doesn't have anything to do with your height. Like, no, it doesn't matter how long your arms are. That's not, they don't say, oh, you have long arms. He's very tall. You're tall because of your leg length, but now your arms have nothing to do with your height. And so I guess, like, he's taller because he has the leverage where he's, like, a little bit further along on the, but the line has always bothered me. I've never understood what it means. And, I mean,
it's not as good as Yippee-ki-yay. They needed a diehard S.
Okay, here's one. This is me with 10 seconds of punching up this script. Yeah, but I've got a head start. And then he pushes him up and he loses his head. That's better. That's way better.
He'll never be head of the class.
Right, yeah. So all right. Well, in my research, I did look up Mythbusters and they did it in the episode called Unarmed and Unharmed. Bus can jump over a 50-foot gap in a roadway, land safely on the other side, and continue driving. This is busted.
Oh. So,
but is not possible.
I wonder how many buses did the Mythbusters destroy? Because they definitely, you know, the producers of this film definitely destroyed a lot of buses in the making of this movie.
True, yeah. So this is episode 134. It aired on December 9th, 2009, if you want to go watch it. I won't get into everything, but it is not possible.
Go look that one up. I got to watch that.
Mythbusters. They are the Womp Womp Mythbusters. So, all right. Well, let's also talk a little bit about we haven't talked at all about Jack and Annie, and I do want to get to that, but the opening and the closing, you know, the prologue and the epilogue of this movie. So, I always remember that it opens with this scene of the elevator, but I forgot how long it goes.
Yeah.
And on this watch, I actually really appreciated how suspenseful that opening scene is and how scary it would actually be to be one of those people on that elevator and not really being scared of the elevator dropping, but being scared of the transfer from the elevator onto the floor.
That's exactly what I would be scared
of. If the elevator drops at any moment, you're sliced in half.
Yeah, this movie made me terrified of any time of an elevator going out when I'm in it, because and me having to climb out of it. Right. Like, no, thank you. I'll just wait for the elevator to land safely or explode, you know, I don't want to have to climb out halfway, you know, when the elevator is halfway between.
That's where, like, I feel like that's like the magic trick where you're getting sawed in half. And if that was me, I would be getting pulled out of the elevator at the exact moment that elevator would drop and goodbye.
Like the one of the most horrifying moment in the film is when the final lady comes out and like it's a hair's breadth of like you even think for an instant as you're watching that her legs just got cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they didn't is insane. But like it's terrifying. It's one of the scariest movie moments that like I can remember as a kid.
But I do think that it's a little undercut because of how long it takes to get to it, because the opening credits of this movie are like 6 minutes of just going down the elevator shaft with super 90s font going across.
It's so 90s. The credits of this movie are so 90s.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. I mean, but I really like the opening. But yeah, I agree. The opening is a little too long. They could have cut that down a little. But
just the credits same time, cut down. They don't need all the, we don't need the like the overture before this movie starts. This isn't Spartacus. Like you know,
let's if it was Spartacus?
Oh, what if? And then I do like
Tony Curtis instead of Dennis Hopper.
When they're all partying at the end, and obviously this is after Jack shoots Harry. Yeah. Harry's all pissed at Jack because he shot the hostage. But then they're all hanging out at the bar, and all of the beers they're drinking, the bottles of beer, just look like such 90s bottles of beer. I don't know how to describe that, except that all of these beer bottles were super 90s looking.
Right.
I
didn't pick up on what they were drinking.
I mean, you couldn't really tell. It's, you know, it's like generic Coors Light, Amstel,
Coors, Michelob, and
exactly. Yeah, I mean, they're not drinking anything good. That's for sure.
Right, right. Yeah, I really appreciated the Jeff Daniels performance more on this one too. I wish he'd been given a little more to do, but I also like it's always fun to have a guy in the chair type guy who's stuck back at the office and turns out and like is trying to figure everything out while the action guy is doing all of the action.
Yeah.
Like, that's always a fun dynamic.
It's fun, too, because I'm sure I saw Dumb and Dumber before I saw this movie.
Right.
So when I was a kid, it was so weird to see the Dumb and Dumber guy in this role, even though Jeff Daniels has done a lot more dramatic work than he has comedic work. But what I know him from as a kid was Dumb and Dumber, also playing a character named Harry, actually.
Yeah, which is really funny.
Oh, interesting. I just put that together. But I did not understand why when all of this crisis is going on, Jack calls him and he's eating. It's like, and he's like trying to talk to Jack, but he's got a mouthful of some sort of food. I'm like,
dude. He's hungover, man. He's trying to cure his hangover.
Yeah, that's true.
Like eating shitty food.
But it's like he had just started eating and then this happened. Like everything happened. He's like gathering maps and information, and he's also stuffing his face with something.
Hey, it feels like that was like
I feel like Jeff Daniels, that was like an actor decision where he's like, no, my character has got to be like eating for whatever reason.
When you're hungry, you eat, man.
Yeah. And it was, it is a surprise when Harry dies in this movie because he dies so much earlier than he'd be expecting. And in this kind of movie, you know, the good guys don't necessarily die all the time. So that we do lose Harry was a nice twist that I do think is one of the few things in this movie that actually could be spoiled if you've never seen it.
Yeah, I agree.
And then we did talk about that ending segment. Couple questions I had. One is, why would they bring Annie to the money drop-off?
That was my biggest underlined question on my page's notes is, why did they let Annie come along in the ambulance? Or why did Jack have the ambulance take him to the money drop site? This makes zero sense. It only happened because the plot needed it to happen.
Because
so they could
be there
20 more minutes onto this movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I did really like that there was payoff to, because the entire time that you're going to Dennis Hopper in his bomber cave, you keep getting these shots as he's walking around of a uniform on a mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like that they finally paid that off at the end where he comes out and he's wearing the uniform.
Yeah.
Like it really helps you put that together. And I thought that was a good payoff.
They do set up some things, but it did feel like this was really tacked on at the end. And they're like, okay, this movie only came in at an hour and 15 minutes. We need it to be an hour 35. So like, what can we do? What can we do? Pop quiz.
And then on top of that, to add another 5 minutes, we have to have Annie handcuffed to the middle bar on the train and spend a bunch of time trying to free her from that. It's fine.
I like Jack's reaction when he realizes he doesn't have the key. Like, he successfully killed Howard. He's saved the bus. He's killed Howard. Like, everything should be done. But no, he still has to save Annie, and she's tied to the train, and the train is nonstop going. And just like his frustration when he's trying to release her. I did like that. What I didn't like that much this time is I always thought of Annie and Jack as being this like romance in this movie. And they're really, I mean, they have chemistry, they work together, but it's weird like how quickly their romance progresses. Like, he's got his arms all over her. Like, when they're off the bus and they're like laying on the panel, and he's got his arms all over her for like, they're already off the bus and he's still like embracing her as his boss walks over.
Also, it's like, okay, so the line is, relationships built on intense situations never work out. And his final line is, all right, I guess we'll just have to rely on sex. What?
Was that the end of the movie? Was that the last line of the movie?
He's like, I guess we'll just have to base our relationship on sex. What?
I appreciate that because of all of the old James Bond movies that I've watched over the last year and how they all end that same way. So I'm okay with that.
It was very James Bond. I thought about, I didn't make a connection, but I did write it down as an honorable mention for the Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg biopic on the basis of sex.
Nice. Yes, very similar.
Just because of the final line.
Do you think that they wrote that line about, I've heard relationships that start from intense situations don't last? Do you think they put that line in the movie because they're like, well, Keanu's kind of a big star, and if we decide to make a sequel to this movie, we want to have a way that we can write ourselves out of that?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. But they also, that's not like,
a phrase people say. Like, nobody's ever said that before.
They also greenlit the sequel pretty quickly after this movie became a blockbuster. Like, I mean, this movie was immediately successful.
Mm-hmm.
And they quickly greenlit the sequel. Keanu decided, no, thank you. They didn't bother to make it a different character. They just recast him as Jason Patrick.
No, it's a different character.
It is definitely not.
No, it definitely. I've seen the. Have you seen the sequel? Yeah,
I'm pretty sure the sequel was the same character.
No, it's her new boyfriend. She references it. Her and Jack have broken up, and she has a new boyfriend. Played by Jason Patrick, and she's like, why does this keep happening to me? He's definitely not playing this.
Oh, okay. See, I haven't seen this movie in 25 years, so yeah.
What I remember from the sequel is that Willem Dafoe has leeches all over him for whatever reason.
Oh, wonderful.
I actually liked Speed 2 when I was younger.
You know who else is in that? Temuera Morrison, who played Jango Fett in Attack of the Clones.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
So looking at the cast of Speed 2, Cruise Control.
Right, well, and I mean... You know, it is interesting because one of my favorite standout characters in this movie is played by Glenn Plummer. And that's Toon Man, I think, was what his license plate said. He's the guy who drives the Ferrari.
Yes, I have that guy written down. Yeah, he was my Jack favorite side character.
Yeah, he was so funny. Like, every moment he was on
screen.
5 minutes
of screen time.
Funny. Yeah.
He's like, there's a bomb on the... What? Oh, yeah. Shit.
I do believe that... Toon Man comes back. I know he comes back in Speed 2 Cruise Control because I saw him on the cast list. I believe that in the last scene of Cruise Control, he has a new car, and his new car gets destroyed by the cruise.
Of course it does. That's amazing. I love it.
Yeah, I do like cruise movies, like not just Tom Cruise movies. Definitely don't like Ted Cruise movies, but I do like movies that take place on cruise ships. And so I think that's why I like Speed 2 Cruise Control. I think it's got a 1.8 rating on Letterboxd. It's definitely better than 1.8. Although looks like Kyle gave it half a star, Jeremiah Panhorst gave it 2, Nolan gave it 2,
panned by
Bob Allen gave it 1.5. So I don't think it would be a big hit if we picked this movie.
I don't think it would, and I don't plan on picking it.
But Joe Morton does also return in Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Well, that's great. Back. I do like Joe Morton. There is a movie I almost wrote down that's going to be, I did write it down. It's going to be an honorable mention for me that has Joe Morton in a supporting role, and I'm not going to pick it, but it's a great.
I have a movie on my list that has Joe Morton in a supporting role.
Awesome.
But yeah, Joe Morton, who is most famous as playing Miles Dyson in Terminator 2.
Correct.
And, but just pops up in lots of different action movies.
He's just really a great 90s bad presence.
I'm a big fan of Joe Morton, and whenever I see him in stuff, and I think I've seen him in TV shows as well. I know there's some connections to Justified. Was he in Justified as well?
Not to my recollection. If he is, I can't recall. He may have been in one of the final seasons of Justified. But I can't look it up off the top of my head.
Fantastic. I feel like I've seen him pop up in different shows and different movies. Smallville, I think is what I was thinking of. That's like Justified, but for whatever reason, that was, I think, the movie I was thinking, or the show I was thinking of.
Talk about, so this movie was directed by Jean Dumont, who only directed a few other movies. Some of them may come up later in Connections. It's really surprising that Jean Dumont didn't get more work after having two very successful back-to-back blockbusters in Speed, followed up by Twister. One year apart. It seemed like... So he got the... Jean Dumont got the Lara Croft Tomb Raider sequel in 2003, but that's really the last thing that Jean Dumont did. So I'm not really sure. Jean Dumont has pretty much fallen off the map.
And he did get his start as a cinematographer. So he did work on, we talked about the connections between this movie and Die Hard. He was one of the cinematographers on Die Hard.
Okay.
Also Hunt for Red October, he did cinematography on. He knows how to film action, and I think it comes through in this movie because they definitely do a good job with the action, with the suspense, where they show the speedometer. For sure. I think that stuff all works really well.
Speaking of Justified, we should mention, we sort of hinted at it here, Speed is written by the creator of Justified, Graham Yost, who is much more known for his TV work these days, but he also wrote Broken Arrow, which came out a couple years later. That's the John Travolta, Christian Slater on a spy plane.
Yep.
And then Mission to Mars as well.
I really like Mission to Mars, at least when I saw it. I have not seen it. Or actually, is it Mission to Mars? There's another movie like Mission to Mars that came out at the same time.
Is a sister movie of something, and I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, there was another Mars movie that came out right around the same time. One of them has a really interesting ending, and I just don't know if it's Mission to Mars.
Oh, Solaris is the other one.
No, that's not. There's another one as well.
Mission to Mars is the one with Gary Sinise, Tim Robbins, Don Cheadle, Connie Nielsen, Jerry O'Connell. Like, this is a fantastic cast.
Yeah, I think Mission to Mars is the one I'm thinking of. But there's one I'm gonna have to do a little Googling because there's one that has a really interesting ending with like the history of Mars and our planet. It's sort of like interstellary.
That sounds fun.
I don't know if it's this one.
That sounds really fun. It's not on my list, but it sounds fun.
Yeah.
We haven't really gone to space yet on this podcast, have we?
Well, and going to Mars, we just went to Mars. So
we did just go to Mars.
It could be fun to go to space.
Maybe I'll add it to my list.
All right, so a couple other things I had on this, and then we can get into listener feedback. The first is, I talked about the sequel, Speed 2 Cruise Control, and that always reminds me of my idea for the Creed sequel title that should have been Creed 2 Bruise Control. What do you think about that? Would have been so much better. I've been holding that joke in for a whole week. Yeah.
Get out.
The other thing is, speaking of cruise control... Yes. Do buses have cruise control? Like, couldn't they have just locked the bus on 50 miles an hour cruise control? Because when you lock your car, you don't drive, so you don't know this. When you lock your car in cruise control, like if I put my car at 70 on cruise control, I can hit the gas and go higher than 70, but I just will never drop below 70.
Have that because of the emergency, like how you would have to constantly be starting and stopping a bus, like pulling up to stops and then...
Yeah, that's true.
I think they would intentionally leave that off because they wouldn't want bus drivers to just be able to skip over all this stuff. Like, I don't know.
That's true.
Or at least for a commuter bus, probably not. I bet those long distance, like Greyhound style buses definitely have cruise control.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Like the Trailways buses. Yeah, those definitely have cruise control.
Bolt buses.
Megabus definitely has cruise control. Yeah, that.
What do you think is a more impressive physical task by Jack? Him being able to like keep himself from getting run over by the bus when he's on the trolley, or when he's running to catch up with the bus, he's probably running like 25 miles an hour to catch up with the bus because the bus is actually driving and he's staying in line with the bus.
I still think it's underneath the bus trying not to fall and get crushed, and he has the trolley and everything. Like it's, yeah, I think it's definitely the trolley problem is way bigger. Yeah, to me. Way more impressive. All
right. Yeah. Do you have anything else in your notes for this one?
Not too much.
What are the things the cops wear around their neck? It's like connected to their headphones, and then they have this like neck band that is it like a microphone? Like
yeah, it's like a microphone headset thing.
But
yeah.
it's like a choker necklace. Like it's very tight around their neck, and it goes around. And I just don't understand what.
I have no idea, dude. I have no idea what it does. Yeah. Maybe it connects to their bulletproof vest somehow.
I don't know. Maybe it goes on their vocal cords to give them a better microphone is the only thing I can think of.
Could be.
Would this movie be any different if it was made today?
Yeah, because it would be done a lot worse because they would insist on CGI instead of practical effects and it would just look a lot worse, I think.
But what about like if the movie took place today? I feel like everybody would have headphones on. So nobody would like Jack would get on the bus and be like, there's a bomb on the bus. And, you know, David Silver would take his headphones off and be like, wait, what did you say? I didn't hear you. I was listening to a podcast.
They would figure out a way to get him his money faster, I think, because we've improved on the ways to get people money from the early 90s.
Yeah, they just pay him in Bitcoin or something.
Yeah, exactly. They would literally just Venmo him the money in 10 seconds and this would be over.
Yeah. All the people on the bus would be tweeting as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Updating on social because everybody would be on their phones. So like the fact that this is in the 90s and people didn't have phones, it did make them more like on an island and isolated in this.
So maybe Soderbergh remakes this as shot on an iPhone.
Oh, maybe. I mean, there would definitely be like instead of him having a camera on the bus, he would see like somebody's Facebook Live as a bus passenger that they're shooting Facebook Live and the woman tries to get off the bus and he blows it up.
He would have a man on the bus.
Why would he blow his own man up?
Because he'd have somebody live streaming it and he would say that he would promise to split the money with them.
But if the bus blows up, they're going to die.
But he wouldn't tell them that.
Why are they on the bus then? Go on this bus, live stream my...
Yeah, because his plan wasn't to blow up the bus at the end of the day. His plan was to get the money.
Well, it was very likely the bus was going to blow up had Jack not saved
him. But you don't, have to tell your minion that.
I mean, that bus...
That creates more of a conflict.
And I think Jack that's actually a bigger flaw in this movie, now that I think about it. Had Jack not gone and chased down that bus, they never would have known the whole like 50 mile an hour thing. They would have gone above 50 and then hit that traffic and just blown up that whole the whole street traffic, and they never would have gotten his money. So he just would have blown up the bus and then
the plan is very, very flawed.
It's relying on Jack getting there and like getting on the bus and keeping the bus from just blowing up.
Right.
Although he did blow up a bus early in the movie, so I don't know. All right, let's get into listener feedback. I'm sure that'll spur some other thoughts. All right, so first listener feedback is from Jeff. Great action suspense thriller movie. Have seen parts of this, but not all the way through for many years. I give it a 4.0. Nice. That is from Jack.
Great Jim Kremley writes in and says, Speed is still a lot of fun. It has some technical issues and it goes on a bit too long, but it does so much right. It's such a good 90s action flick. Sandra Bullock, Dennis Hopper, and Keanu Reeves are all great. 4.5 out of 5 for me.
Nice. I like that Jim said it has some technical issues. I bet you Jim has done the math of that the jump and is like, he's also done the Mythbusters thing. And he's like, yeah, no, you can't do that. You can't just jump. Jim,
Professor Crumley is a very smart man. I would not be surprised.
Kyle says rating is a 3.5. It's a classic. What more needs to be said? I do feel like that's a
classic. Why is it a 3.5, Kyle?
I mean, it's still above average. I feel like what more needs to be said is kind of a running theme of all of our listener feedback this week.
Right. I appreciate it. Olin writes in and says, a decent, fun knockabout. Set tone from the off with the main policing doing a ludicrous speed jump on the hill and the road.
Yeah, that was great.
The blind dip that could have led to the first set of casualties was a great advert for LA buses. The amount of high force crashes without a scratch, even the bomb, didn't impact the bus all that much. 3.5. This is a good advertisement for buses. Maybe not the best advertisement for the LAPD, but LA buses.
When I was in LA, I took the bus a decent amount because the traffic really is so bad. And so I was trying to get across town, and I did, when I was in LA, I did a lot of walking, or I would hop on a bus. And it actually, Alan Ruck is right. Like, taking the bus in LA is great because you're above ground. There's big windows. You can see everything. So it's a great way to see the city, and you only pay, a couple bucks to take the bus instead of paying like $20 for a tour bus.
Yep.
So
thanks, Alan Ruck.
And to touch on what Olin said too, the start of this movie with the car jumping, that car flying on the hill, that was straight out of what is that? Not Cruisin' USA, but there was like a Nintendo 64 game where you did a lot of like San Francisco Rush maybe was the one that did that, where you drive and you do a lot of jumps through hills. So
right.
Good bit of foreshadowing that we'd be jumping a bus later on the movie. How many other knockabouts do you think we've done?
There's been a few. I mean, Hot Fuzz has some knockabout in it. Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 is a knockabout.
Is it a knockabout? I don't know. I think a knockabout needs to be more fun than some of those movies. I feel like Top Gun is probably a knockabout.
Top Gun is a knockabout for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know if this year we've done any knockabouts. No, we haven't this year done any knockabouts. Just from my limited understanding of what a knockabout is.
Knockaboot.
Yeah. All right. And Stefan, this film is a classic action movie for a reason. It opens strong and doesn't take its foot off the pedal, pun intended. The supporting cast is fantastic, and the action is especially great considering it takes place mostly in one vehicle. I know my rating is probably high, but this is the bomb. 5 out of 5.
Wow.
Very high listener average this week.
This is our third highest listener average so far this season. That takes us to 4.1 for the listeners.
Nice. Glad everybody had fun with this movie.
Very good. I'm really glad everybody had a good time.
What is there a word for that when a movie takes place mostly like all in one, like it's like a bottle episode, but I feel like there's a movie for like when a whole bunch of people are trapped in one location. I was trying to think what that would be.
No, called. I don't know if there is. It's a bucket movie. I don't know.
Like you just recently watched the Poseidon Adventure, right?
Yeah.
I wish you hadn't, because I definitely would have suggested that, because it's the same kind of thing where it's a whole bunch of people trapped in one location. We get that the 90s had a lot
Towering,
of style.
Towering Inferno does it. Die Hard does it. Yeah, it's a big movie trope, and it's usually they're just called disaster flicks,
But yeah, I just feel like there's a I don't know what that would be called. I wish I could think. I'm sure there's a term for it that I just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's where like a whole bunch of people are trapped in one location, which is what we get with Speed. A couple of the movies on my list are that style as well.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
All right. So you said 4.1 is our listener average. I'll go first.
Cool. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. This is a weird one to rate, because I feel like, if I probably will be high on this movie because I really like it. I just had a lot of fun watching it. It doesn't really make sense, a lot of parts of it, but there's not really any characters that are developed. I don't know anything about anybody, but you don't need that from this kind of movie. So I'll be in line with the listeners. I'll give a 4, which is a little higher than what I was expecting. I thought I was going to give a 3.5 heading into this.
Yeah, I think this one falls into the nostalgia trap, where we look back fondly on this movie, having watched it so many times growing up. But this is one of those ones where it's sort of a modern classic for a reason. Like, it still holds up. Like I said, the action holds up, the suspense holds up, the practical effects hold up really well for the most part. The performances hold up. I think that everybody's having a really good time, and this is a really fun movie to just sit down and, spend 2 hours with. And there certainly worse ways to spend 2 hours with Keanu Reeves or Sandra Bullock than this movie. I'm right there with you and the listeners. I'm also going to give it a 4. Like, it's not a perfect movie, and we talked about some of the flaws, but it's also not a 3.5. It's not a 3. Like, it's not a bad movie. It's a 4. And that is going to average
I'm revising mine. Not by much. It's not going to make any difference on the average, but I'm revising mine to a 3.99, and I'm taking off 0.01 for But Helen? I'm Tall. No, for But I'm Tall, because that line is so stupid.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, that is going to give us an average of a 4.03, which is going to be a 4 for the purposes of the letterboxing.
I would imagine this is pretty high on what we've done so far this year.
Not too bad. I believe it is our third highest rated so far this year. Yeah, it is. Actually, it's fourth underneath. Right now, leading the pack is Spartacus with a 4.4. And then we have Young Frankenstein with a 4.11. And then Man Who Shot Liberty Valance with a 4.10. So all three of those are very close. And then we have this one with a 4.03. So all
four. I would imagine Always Be My Maybe is bringing up the rear, or My Best Friend.
Always Be My Maybe came in with a 3.26, and that is not bringing up the rear. My Best Friend's Wedding is with a 2.97.
Damn. All right. Well, let's see what we're gonna do. Oh wait, we gotta do connections still.
Yeah, let's do some connections. Yeah. I don't have a ton to previous movies that we covered this season. I thought my movie map was really, really good, but you know, we could talk about how there's a train in Always Be My Maybe. There are trains in My Best Friend's Wedding. There are trains in this movie. We'd talk about and how it's
Liberty Valance as well.
Yeah. There's a road trip where everybody's trying to get from one place to the next in a hurry.
Unconventional bus is kind of like the carriage. The bus is kind of like the carriage in Young Frankenstein.
True. And there's unconventional romance. People meeting under unconventional circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really have a ton of other connections to other movies. Always My Maybe, obviously, all the Keanu Reeves stuff, and that he specifically mentions this movie. And I think this is the first movie we have that's taken place in L.A. this year. Always My Maybe was San Francisco.
Yeah, so far this year.
But so in Always Be My Maybe, Randall Park's dad's character works in repairing HVACs.
Had
Ortiz, who is a handyman. So
yeah, good point. Good call.
I wonder if Ortiz would be able to afford rent in San Francisco like Randall Park's family could.
Yeah.
Jeff did write me in and said, you've clearly never paid for any HVAC repair in your life because they definitely made a lot of money. So I have not paid for any HVAC in my life. So all right. Any other what's your movie map for this week?
Because of all the driving along the LA freeways and trying to get from one place to another and figure out directions and getting on and off and all the driving around, obviously it's Collateral.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That I did not think about Collateral. And going in, I was like, okay, obviously it's going to be Point Break. That is the closest connection to this, because this is kind of just like an updated Point Break a few years later. But I actually got much more taken of Pelham 1-2-3. It's people all trapped in one location on public transportation. We end on a train. We have a train driver who was killed, which I believe happened taking up Pelham 1-2-3. We have the terrorist who is holding the public transportation ransom as well. So, I think that actually aligns better than Point Break for me.
Yeah, Collateral, the main thing was just basically that movie is such a tour of L.A., and so is this movie. It felt like the most on point. But as far as, you make a lot of good points about it being connected to Pelham as well.
I mean, well, in Collateral, it's a taxi cab. This is a bus. So, right.
And I mean, he is holding the driver hostage, making him take him everywhere that he needs to go.
Yeah, those are definitely good points. So, all right, now we can move on to our connections for next week. So we're going to take our listener suggestions. We're going to take our suggestions. We'll have a final couple movies that we will do. We'll do a final four again. Once we do pick our movie for next week, make sure you send in your feedback, your rating, your next movie connections, your questions to themovieladder@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us @laddermovie on Twitter. Mm-hmm. That's where you tweet things. It's on Twitter. And in addition, don't forget to check out the Letterboxd watch list, because every movie that's suggested gets added to that Letterboxd watch list if you're looking for something to watch. All right, let's get into our connections. We'll kick things off with Jeff. He has Silver Streak, a runaway train versus a runaway bus.
I think Silver I think Silver Streak is his new young Frankenstein. He has suggested that a few times.
Has he? And the next that he had was Gravity with Sandra Bullock. Gravity was a fantastic theater experience. I have not seen it not in the theater. Yeah, I don't know.
Me neither.
But yeah, Gravity is, you know, Sandra Bullock stuck in one location as well.
Yep.
It would be interesting to revisit Gravity.
It would be, especially on a smaller screen.
And then his third was Unstoppable as well. Nice. So yeah,
That's the one about the runaway train, right?
Yes, with Denzel Washington and Chris Pine. I actually just recently rewatched that. That's pretty fun. It's that's more of like a natural disaster where, well, not really natural, but like the train just has mechanical issues versus you know, versus like being a hostage situation. But I guess that's, you could say that about Gravity as well. And I don't know about Silver Streak, where that falls. And I was just checking because I was like, I thought that Jeff also suggested Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but he said he thought about Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But luckily, Jim Crumley wrote in and he said his main suggestion is another movie about a cop trying to protect people from a diabolical criminal. That is the Steve McQueen 1968 action classic Bullet. Bullet also features one of the most influential chase scenes of all time. Yep. Bullet is his first IMDb credit for Ralph Grierson, who also played piano on Speed and a bunch of other famous movies, and it's streaming on HBO Max.
Nice.
What I do know about Bullet is I think that there are a lot of those flying cop cars going through the air up the hills. So, you know, that would, Olin would like that, I'm sure.
When did we do Great Escape last year? Would this line up?
It was in the summer. Yeah, okay. No, that was movie 21. So we're a little ways off. What we did after Point Break was we did Set It Off last year.
All right.
His second suggestion is another one where Alan Ruck is being driven around under duress. That is Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
He says
he doesn't see it streaming for free right now, but it is playing on IFC today. I don't know which day that is. And AMC several times during starting in March as well. So those are his two. He said he prefers Bullet over Ferris Bueller, but he's too big of an Alan Ruck fan. All right.
Fair enough.
Kyle's suggestions, he's got three of them. The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, a cross-country road trip, takes place primarily on a bus. Came out the same year as Speed Connection Bus from 1994.
Mm-hmm.
13, Zemetti, a suspense thriller noir where the main character gets mysterious directions meant for someone else and follows them. The less you know going into this movie, the better. Okay. The connection is following rules.
Good to know. Oh, yeah, there are the rules, yeah. Yes. That's against the rules, Jack.
We didn't say Pop Quiz Hot Shot once, which I remember I had. You remember back in the early 90s, you could take movie sounds and make them like the sounds on your computer, like when you
your instant messenger sounds.
Yeah. I remember I definitely used Pop Quiz Hot Shot as one of mine. Like every time, like a friend would get on to AOL Instant Messenger, it would be like Pop Quiz Hot Shot, and I had like Hasta La Vista Baby and some other ones.
Take the cannoli.
Right. No, I was not that, refined back then. And number three for Kyle, The Sweet Hereafter, Connection, a bus crash, a movie about a fatal bus crash, and how a small community came to terms with it.
Well,
all right. Olin, his first suggestion is Demolition Man from 1993, the year before this. Sandra Bullock working with a police force in major California metropolitan area, taking on one of the most psychopathic criminals of 1990s Los Angeles. I believe that movie takes place in 2020 or 2021 as well.
Yeah. And it is the LAPD, right?
Yeah. Yes. It's been a while since I've seen that. Yeah. But, and I don't think I've ever I've seen all of it in different chunks, but never sat down and watched it.
Yeah.
His next is one we just talked about, The Poseidon Adventure, passengers on a motor face peril and must attempt to take control of the ship to avoid disaster. And I said Gene Hackman is in it as well.
Yep. I really wish that I hadn't watched that as one of my New Year's watches.
Yeah, because it's
fantastic.
Perfect connection. Yeah,
it's I've a perfect connection. It's fantastic.
And it would be like the Speed 2 Cruise Control is like the spiritual sequel of Poseidon Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then Blue Velvet from 1986, the prototype for Dennis Hopper, villainous character as Frank Booth, also as police investigating him. All right, Stefan sent in a couple suggestions. The first is the entire series of Justified because it's created by Graham Yost.
That's not what we're going to do, but it does, Stefan and I talk about Justified quite often, and it's Justified has a very special place in my heart. I love that show. Season 2 especially is like chef kiss emoji fantastic.
Maybe someday I'll finish that show.
Yeah.
I think I'm still in third,
season. On the fourth season.
Yeah. All right. Into the Wild, a movie that takes place mostly in a bus. I don't know if I would say mostly in a bus. A bus does play a significant role in Into the Wild.
Yeah. How about a tragedy on a bus?
There you go. That would be what we would call it. Also, Rebel Without a Cause because of Dennis Hopper.
Yep.
And Pleasantville because of Jeff Daniels.
Very nice.
Pleasantville would be super fun to watch right now with WandaVision.
It really, really would. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that at all. I like Pleasantville. I think Pleasantville is really
Pleasantville
good.
Pleasantville's great. Yeah. All right, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I have 12 of them written down. I'm not going to read them all. All right, well, I won't nominate them all, obviously. But I had, I think, 8 movies written down before I even started Speed, because they were movies I thought. So why don't I let you go first? Maybe you'll take a couple of mine.
So I'm going to go ahead and do 4 official connections, and I'm going to add a 5th just because we talked about it during this movie. And during this podcast, and I think it would be a good connection if we decided to go that way. So first one that came to mind, even before I watched the movie, is a Dennis Hopper movie I've never seen. And that's Easy Rider, which is Dennis Hopper on a road trip instead of controlling your road trip.
On my list as well. Also never seen it.
Yeah. Next one would be for Jeff Daniels, Steve Jobs, which I've never seen. Next one would be... We talked about it earlier when we talked about Jan DeMont films, Twister, which is a movie I have not revisited since the 90s. And I would love to revisit.
So fun. Yeah, that would be fun. Yeah,
I would love to revisit Twister. Next one I wanted to do is another movie about the LAPD trying to stop a bad bomber. And it also led to... is part of a franchise, and that's Lethal Weapon 3. And then my honorable mention slash 5th pick is going to be the one we mentioned here, also by John DeMont, and that's going to be Mission to Mars. We haven't been to space yet.
I was expecting you were going to say Die Hard with a Vengeance there.
No, because I figured it was on your list after we talked about it. I switched out Die Hard with a Vengeance was on my honorable mentions. I swapped it out for Lethal Weapon 3 at the last second. Another one that was on my list is Blown Away, the Jeff Bridges Bomb Squad movie. That was on my honorable mentions.
Have you seen Blown Away before?
I have, yeah. And then also on my honorable mentions... There's another very famous movie that came out around this time that starts with a person trying to stop an elevator from falling, and that is Mission Impossible.
Oh, right, yep.
It starts with a very intense elevator scene, so that also was on my list before I rewatched the movie. So those are my honorable mentions. What do you got?
And when you mentioned Blown Away as well, too, I think one thing we didn't touch on is that this period of the 90s, and I don't know if it had to do with some of the terrorist attacks that happened in the 90s, but there were a ton of movies about bombings.
Movies about bombings.
There was Blown Away, there is Speed, there's Die Hard with a Vengeance, there's Arlington Road is another one, which was a little bit later, that was a couple years after this. But I do feel like the...
Devil's Own with Harrison Ford and Brad Pitt.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an IRA bomber.
Yep. So, bombing. A lot of things about bombings. All right. So now I got to whittle down my list because you only took one off my list. So I did have Easy Rider on my list. So
great.
Remove that. Let's see what else. This is one I'm going to remove just because I don't really want to watch it. But Sandra Bullock in a movie about things crashing into things.
Oh,
that would
Lord.
Be Crash. We're not going to do
take
Crash.
Take it off your list. We're not
taking it off my list. Another one, I just don't think it's a strong enough connection, but it's one I've had on my list to see it. It's supposed to be a great action movie. That's The Raid.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of people in a building. I don't really know much about it. I think it's like a video game, sort of. So I'll take that off my list. Another one I don't think the connection is that great, Logan Lucky. There might have been a cast connection there as well, and that's why I put it on my list, which I don't have written down. But, I just don't think Logan Lucky is strong enough connection.
I don't think there's a good connection there.
Yeah. All right. So that gets us down to 1, 2. All right. So I got to get down to 4 or 5. I'll take Lifeboat off my list. This is one that's come up before. It's a Hitchcock movie about a bunch of people on a lifeboat. I did like it as like an idea of like a whole bunch of people in one location. I just don't think it's, I don't know. I don't feel like it's the best connection. I also had the French Connection on my list. I think Dennis Hopper was the cast connection there, and it's an action movie. We can do a better one.
It's also very famous for its car chases.
Yeah, I've never seen French Connection. Big chase scenes. But I just don't think it's there. Well, all right, now I've whittled the list down a little bit, so I still have 6. all right, so first one that I will suggest is Richard Jewell. That is I've never seen it, but it's about a bomber in Atlanta, which is that was what motivated the villain Dennis Hopper's character in Speed.
Yeah, I just watched the Netflix miniseries on Richard Jewell. It was really well made.
Yeah. All right, number 2. We talked about Joe Morton and how much we love Joe Morton.
Yep.
And so I figured we should do a Joe Morton movie. The sequel to this movie is coming out soon, so it's very timely. And it's one I never saw, but it's got a great cast of lots of people from TV shows. And that is Godzilla, King of Monsters. So it's the second Godzilla movie that came out a few years ago.
Did I see that one?
I don't know.
That's not the one we saw together, right?
No. This came out after I'd moved. Okay. So Godzilla, King of Monsters has Kyle Chandler in it.
I did not see that one.
Tywin Lannister is in it. It has Eleven from Stranger Things. It's
like they watched all of Bryan Cranston.
Yeah. It's like they watched all of these good TV shows and they just like picked different actors from it. Joe Morton is also in that. And it's about a monster that's putting a city under siege.
True.
And then we'll be all caught up for Godzilla versus Kong when it comes out. The next I will suggest is basically Speed, but on a plane, which is Die Hard, but on a bus, but on a plane. That is Executive Decision.
Yes, and that also has a bomb.
Yes, and I believe there's some cast connections. I know Kurt Russell's in it. Joe Morton might be in that one as well.
He's the chief. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So that's number 3. So I have 3 movies left, and I'm only going to take one more pick. I won't nominate Bird Box, although I've never seen Bird Box. It's got Sandra Bullock, but not enough of a connection there. So one is about a runaway, runaway automobile that I don't know much about, but I've heard it's really good. My brother liked it. I know Chris Ryan suggested it. The other is about a runaway whitewater rafting boat. Which one should I take? The boat or the automobile?
Take the automobile because I don't want to watch The River Wild with Meryl.
I've never seen The River Wild.
I knew what it was as soon as you said it. I don't want to watch David Strait, even though I love David Strait there. I don't want to watch The River Wild.
All right.
Thank you.
So Sorcerer is my other suggestion.
Whoa.
This is from what's his name? The guy who did Exorcist did this movie.
Okay. Wow, Chris Ryan pick.
Chris Ryan talked about this on a podcast a few months ago, and then it sounded like something that my brother would like, so I suggested it to my brother, and he said, this movie is crazy, you have to watch it. Okay. Roy Scheider is in it as well.
Nice.
So, yeah, this is William Friedkin is the name of the...
Oh, Billy Friedkin.
William Friedkin.
Nice.
So,
all right. Yeah. Well, I guess you get to go first, right?
Do you want to read off what everybody
I will read off what we have. Yeah, so we have Silver Streak, Gravity, Unstoppable, Bullet, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, 13 to Zemiti, The Sweet Hereafter, Demolition Man, Poseidon Adventure, Blue Velvet, the entire series of Justified, Into the Wild, Rebel Without a Cause, and Pleasantville. So this is the first week in a while we have had no listeners repeat a pick.
It's true.
No one has suggested anything that anybody else suggested. So that's really fun. And then we also had Easy Rider, Steve Jobs, Twister, Lethal Weapon 3, Mission to Mars, Richard Jewell, Godzilla, King of the Monsters, Executive Decision, and The Sorcerer.
It's just Sorcerer. There's no the before. It's not about the Sorcerer. It's just about Sorcerer. So,
Sorcerer Supreme?
Yeah, exactly. All right, I'll go first. So we get one listener, one host suggestion.
Yep.
I'm very intrigued by a couple. Demolition Man, I think, would be fun. Pleasantville, I'm into as well. 13 Zemetti, just because we don't know anything about it, and the rule is, or it's about following the rules. But I really like both, and I like Jeff's picks. I like everybody's picks this week. But I'm really intrigued by Jim's picks, both of Jim's.
Yeah,
and I think both could be very fun. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I think there is that connection of wheels spinning.
They also do a car jump.
Yeah,
there's a car jump.
That's true. But I've never seen both of it. And so we, you talked about the Great Escape with Steve McQueen. Let's check out Bullet with Steve McQueen. So I'll go Bullet as my pick.
That's a solid, solid pick. Nice. For my listener pick, I am going to... I am going to go with one of...
There's a lot of good ones. This,
yeah, I know. It's really hard. I'm going to go with Stefan's pick of Pleasantville then, and I'm going to make it really hard on us because I think Pleasantville will be a lot of fun. So that's going to be my listener pick.
All right. So we've got Bullet, Pleasantville. All right. I get to pick one of yours. So you have Easy Rider, Steve Jobs, Twister, Lethal Weapon 3, Mission to Mars. Just since it's a blind spot for me, I'll go, and for you, I'll go Easy Rider.
Very nice. Very nice.
This is shaping up to be like the, I don't know.
This what's is
the
best
final three? I'm trying to think of like the best final three in Survivor history, and I can't think of any.
Yeah, and then we're going to add, a really cheesy movie to it.
It's like the Survivor Heroes versus Villains of
I mean, we were talking about Kurt Russell earlier on the podcast. If we want to watch a worse version of this movie, we can watch Executive Decision.
It's not worse.
It's pretty bad. If we want to watch a worse version of this movie, we can watch Executive Decision.
Well, you're not selling it.
Honestly, I'm really intrigued by your pick of Sorcerer. And I want to trust Chris Ryan. I love Chris Ryan. Being the Chris Ryan of this podcast, I have to pick Sorcerer. As my pick from your list. So I'm going to go with Sorcerer.
Sorcerer.
So.
All right. Well.
This is four really interesting movies.
Yeah. So our final four is Bullet, Pleasantville, Easy Rider, and Sorcerer. I'm doing my best to.
No movies made after the year 2000.
Look at us. We are just nostalgic freaks. Letterboxd is not loading any of these movies. There we go. All right, so Sorcerer is not streaming anywhere. Bullet is on HBO Max. Easy Rider is it's directed by Dennis Hopper as well.
Nice.
Not streaming anywhere for Easy Rider.
Oh, come on, Easy Rider.
And Pleasantville
is probably also on HBO Max.
Let's see. It is not. Oh, look at this. We picked all these movies that aren't streaming anywhere. It is on Showtime.
Letterboxd says that you can rent it on Amazon.
All of these movies are rentable. They're just not free streaming. Yeah. Right. Just not free streaming.
Right.
So Bullet is the only one where it's quote unquote free streaming if you have HBO Max. Yeah, I don't. I would be happy with any of the four of these. And I kind of wonder if we should do random number generator 1 through 4. Because unless you have a strong feeling one way or the other.
I think the best thing we can do is take off Pleasantville because both of us have seen it. We haven't seen any of these three.
Okay. But Pleasantville would be so fun, though. It would. I don't know. I haven't seen it in a long time. I think it would be interesting to go back and I would have no problem going back and revisiting Pleasantville.
Does it hold up, et cetera? Yeah.
And if we do a random number generator 1 to 4, there's a 75% chance we're going to get a movie none of us have seen.
That's a good point.
And there's a 25% chance we're going to get one both of us have seen. So it's kind of fun to do that.
Let's do it. I don't mind that at all.
Done random number generator before. We've done.
We've done a poll. We've done a listener poll before.
That's hard. Timing on the polls is hard.
Yeah, and I mean nobody's going to pick Sorcerer, and that's the problem.
Nobody's going to pick any of the old movies. They're all going to pick. Yeah, exactly. Pleasantville would definitely win a poll. I almost think we should just put up a poll to see what would win. Pleasantville would win. All right. Well, I'm on random.org now. I have entered true random number generator 1 to 4. And I'm going to hit generate. I'm pretty nervous. And so the way they line up, 1 is Bullet, 2 is Pleasantville, 3 is Easy Rider, 4 is Sorcerer.
Wonderful. And I love it.
Drum roll, please.
Yep.
We're watching Sorcerer next week. Oh, man. I bet my brother would come on for Sorcerer next week.
I would love to podcast about Sorcerer with your brother. Is that really what we want to do, or do we want to just chop this entire segment off the podcast?
Oh, man, are you serious?
I'm kidding. No, it has really great reviews on Letterboxd. I think it can be a lot of fun. It's got a really interesting cast. Let's do it. We're gonna watch our first true horror movie.
Is it a horror movie?
It is.
I don't know. I don't think it's really.
I mean, the tagline says the only wages worth running for, diving for, killing for are the wages of fear.
Yeah, before you scare off the people who are afraid of horror movies, it is not a horror movie. It is listed as genres as adventure and thriller. It is not listed as a thriller, horror
movie. Right. I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, and the picture looks like a bus that's driving out of control. I'm pretty sure that's what it's about. I think it's about people trying to drive. A dangerous mission that involves driving. And I think this will be fun. So yeah, we're doing Sorcerer next week. William Friedkin's 1977 movie. I will let the listeners know I've never seen I've seen one William Friedkin movie, and that is Blue Chips. But he has a lot of better movies than Blue Chips.
Come on, Shaq. Yeah. Shaq's acting debut.
All right. Next week we're watching Sorcerer. Sorry to make you have to shell out for the Amazon, but it's got great reviews. It should be worth it.
So I'm excited. This is gonna
check
be
out. Check your local library. You might be able to find it on there to get the Blu-ray from your library.
I'm excited to introduce our listeners to a movie that they probably had never even heard of before.
Let's see who's seen it. Let's see.
Well, your brother, obviously.
My brother's seen it. Nope. People I'm friends with on Letterboxd have seen it. Adam Kempinar has seen it.
Todd the Librarian has seen it. Okay. I don't know if Dan Ehrenberg listens to this podcast, but he's seen it.
David Chen gave this movie 5 stars. If you're a David Chen fan, if you like his taste in movies, he gave it 5 stars.
Right, so. Well, I'll take it.
All right. So next week we're watching Sorcerer, and the connection is a seemingly a runaway bus, but we'll find out.
Seemingly a runaway bus.
I think that will be the connection. Seemingly a runaway bus. All right, Brennan, what is one thing you're going to watch next week?
So one thing I'm going to watch next week, I'm going to take The King's Speech to Tinker Tailor's Soldier Spy, which I have never seen. It's got a cast connection from The King's Speech. Really excited to see it. It's a movie that you and Mac, or at least Mac, has been bugging me to watch for a really long time. I'm excited to knock it off of my list.
Yeah. I liked that movie. I like Tinker Tailor's Soldier Spy. I haven't seen it in a while. But, yeah, it's good. It's a good, you'll like it. It's a slow burn spy thriller.
So. Nice.
For me, I am behind on my Criterion watch, so...
You gotta catch up.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch In the Mood for Love, because I needed to watch a romance movie. So that's supposed to be... that's another one. My brother's like sends me 2 movie recommendations a day, and I'm like, I did not have enough time to watch all of these movies. So you can blame him for my ever growing watch list. So, In the Mood for Love is what's on my next watch list.
Nice. And
right this second, I'm about to go watch Michigan State play basketball, and hopefully they win. Hopefully, everybody who's listening to this will know if they won or lost.
Exactly.
I at the moment do not know. So.
All right. Well, go green.
Yeah, go white. All right. So, yes, next week, watch The Sorcerer. So check that out. You can rent it. And thank you again for joining the podcast. I close out my closing notes. But make sure you follow us on Letterboxd, The Movie Ladder, and Twitter, at Ladder Movie, themovieladder@gmail.com to send in your feedback on Sorcerer. Hopefully it's a new watch for a whole bunch of people. It's always fun to discover something. Yeah. And send in your feedback. Ratings and next movie connections off of that. Brendan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at FitzyBrendan. That's about it.
Yeah, you can find me at BrooksZA. And that's it for this week. But next week, there is a Bond podcast scheduled. So you can start watching some James Bond movies, watch Daniel Craig's. So,
sorry to disappoint anyone. I will not be on that podcast with you. So.
Yeah, well, probably not. Yeah,
probably not. Well, shouts to all my... Never say never again.
Fair enough.
All right, shouts to all my Chris Ryan heads out there.
Let's go on an adventure. Sorcerer next week.
Alakazam.